and welcome to episode 39 of the Back to Front show. Hello, Kieran. How are you today?
Finally,
indeed. Yes, it's been what, a couple of weeks since our last episode?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. Actually, that's simply not true at all, is it? It was 17th of January 2015. It feels like a different era. Yeah, I know. It's I don't know what happened. I mean,
life.
Life happened. We went on retreat, didn't we? We went on a retreat on the levels in the beautiful West Country.
A spiritual awakening.
Yes, we were slightly overweight West Country tech men, and we ate lots of kale.
Yeah.
Juiced.
Spoon whittling.
Spoon whittling indeed. Mm. We juiced lots. Yeah. We yogured.
Yeah.
We chanted.
Uh-huh.
And we returned, different people.
We did. We're back.
We're back with a bang.
Yeah, but everything's changed.
Everything has changed. You've moved. You're no longer in the beautiful city of Wales. It is a city, was it?
It is a city. It's the smallest city in Britain.
Smallest city.
One or the other.
I will miss the accompanying boy racer exhaust pipes.
Yeah, it's quiet around these parts.
Yeah, so where are you now?
I'm in Cheltenham.
Cheltenham, home of GCHQ, of course.
Yeah, or as Jonham says, halfway to Birmingham.
You see, that's an interesting way of putting it. I mean,
it's interesting looking at it. Yeah.
Imagine if we thought of every city in the world as halfway to somewhere. That'd be quite interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
so you're in beautiful Cheltenham. And it is beautiful.
It is.
Do you only choose to live in beautiful places, Kieran?
Typically, yeah.
Yeah.
That's our criteria for selecting homes.
But you had another criteria for selecting this home, of course.
What's that?
One floor.
Oh, yeah, that's it, yeah. Wasn't really a criteria. It was just, it just happened.
Yeah, so how is bungalow life?
It's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah?
It's good on the knees.
It's good on the knees, yeah. Do you not, I mean, surely you can't get up to your 10,000 steps, though, without stairs.
Oh, easily.
Really?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All that nervous pacing.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Pacing up and down on Skype calls.
Skype calls, yes, because Skype is a job.
It is.
Along with email.
Skype and email, that's all I do.
Yeah, so what are you doing now? I mean, we haven't spoken since the 17th of January 2015.
No.
So, what's going on in Kieran's world?
I'm independent, as the kids say.
Oh, independent. You mean jobless?
Yeah, yeah, I'm unemployed.
Unemployed, yeah. So,
I'm working pretty much 50% of my time for the wonderful guys at Assemble down in New Zealand, doing nice things with filmmakers and websites and digital stuff.
Cool.
And then about the other 50% of my time, I'm working on my own stuff, as they say. And also, I'm working on Kelowna Coffee.
Kelowna Coffee.
This
name is familiar to us.
It is. Well, to anybody in the Southwest coffee/tech community.
Indeed, yes. Yes. It's
few. We say Southwest, we mean England.
Yes. Yeah, the Southwest Americans. Probably not that familiar. Not yet.
No.
Although once Maxwell takes his project global, I'm sure they will be.
Yes, exactly.
So you've been drinking. You're back on the caffeine, then, are you?
I am back on the caffeine. Yeah, but there was a hiatus while my wife was pregnant of no caffeine, and now I'm back because I need it.
So your wife was pregnant. Am I assuming you've had a child?
I have had a child in the interim. That a child has been born.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is big news.
It is big news.
And how are you finding fatherhood?
Pretty good, yeah, yeah. Tired, but yes. But elated.
Tired but elated, yes. Mixed emotions, then.
Yes, mixed emotions.
Oh, dear, but... I'm assuming... the coffee cup.
Sorry.
Gently, Kieran.
Gently, yeah.
How's working at home then? Or have you decided to venture into the world of co-working?
Well, as you well know, Keir.
I know.
Leading up to.
Yes.
I have recently entered the world of co-working.
Is it all Lego heads and, like, you know, Rory Lichtenstein pillows? Or
it isn't. I purposely selected, I was selective based on whether there was a Lego head anywhere in the room. And needless to say, no Lego men can be found in this particular co-working space.
But recent studies have shown, and I read this on Medium, that... The abundance of Lego-related paraphernalia, particularly Star Wars,
right,
has a direct correlation to tech related productivity.
Oh, really? Mm. Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah.
See how that would work.
Yeah. I'll have to try it. But anyways, all good.
Just build a, you know, Star Destroyer in your...
Have you seen the new one?
No, I haven't actually, which is an absolute disgrace. But as you know, I have some things going on.
Well, yeah, it's seemingly, you know, the return to caffeine and a new child.
Yes, exactly. And moving house.
Oh, yes. Indeed. Indeed.
How about you? How was life in Bath?
Well, I am still here in Bath, but I've had a loft conversion.
Wow.
I'm in the new loft recording today.
Is this a studio space?
Well, no, it's a bedroom, if I'm brutally honest. But obviously modelled on, you know, lofts in Brooklyn.
Yeah, obviously.
There's
every loft in Brooklyn has a dormer.
It does. Actually, that would be quite funny, wouldn't it?
What? Loft spaces with dormers in?
I think that could set a whole new trend.
Yeah.
Maybe we have to do that in Williamsburg, though. I think that would be more the thing. Yeah, so I've got, you know, Craft Ale posters all across the wall. And
nice. Bit of neon.
Bit of neon and a sort of artisanal teas made that wakes me up at 4:53 in the morning for maximum productivity.
Nice.
But no, life's good here. It's not much has changed. As you well know, the city remains chocolate boxy for tourists. But no, it's good.
Good.
Life is good. But
so we should probably say what we're doing here.
Yeah, why are we here for anyone who's listening?
Why are we back?
I don't know. What happened?
Have we just got time on our hands?
It must be. I mean, you know, your job's not that demanding anymore. My job's even less demanding.
Yeah.
So we just thought we'd get back behind the mics.
Yeah.
I think we missed it, to be honest.
I think we did.
But we had a bit of a crisis of confidence, really, I think. I think a lot of it relates back to the fact that the name of the show, the Back to Front show, the original emphasis on front-end and back-end development was kind of no longer our domain. It was something we've segued out of over the last sort of 18 months. And I think
when was the last time you coded in anger, Keir?
Oh, in anger? I've always coded in anger. It's always filled me with anger. Realistically, probably when I did the website for this podcast, which is probably 18 months, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I still dabble in a few dibs here and there. But yeah, on a day-to-day basis, my job no longer entails code. At the code face. That's not to say that I don't keep up on things. I do. I'm still very interested in, big portions of the industry and the technology. But it doesn't play such a significant role in my day to day, which I'm actually happy with. You know, I think both of us have coded for a long time, and I think the natural progression as you move along is that your jobs often change and you. You move away from that. Not everyone does, of course, but I think...
I was going to ask, do you think it's sort of inevitable in a way? Because, when I was first starting out in the industry, I knew a lot of developers who are sort of in a similar position to where I am now. Mm. And were either fighting the urge to be pulled into management or, consulting or whatever, because they preferred, the terminal and a bit of code, as opposed to, sitting in meetings or on Skype calls or just doing email all day. Or they were trying desperately to get out of coding.
Mm.
I think it seems to be a sort of point where people divide, They either become hardcore, lifelong techies or they don't.
I'm not sure it's inevitable. It's quite interesting because at Shopify, where I am still, happily, since we last spoke on this show, there's kind of two tracks. One's kind of to go down the, they call it lead or management role, which is where you express an interest in doing that and building out a team and contributing in that respect. And the idea there is that you end up not really having individual wins, but your wins come through your work with the team. And the other route is what they call individual contributor. So you still, in the case of development or design, you would still be having those individual wins or as part of a team, but you've chosen not to go down the lead route. And both are absolutely valid. You can earn the same amount of remuneration on both tracks and have the same amount of quote-unquote status within the company. And I think what they recognised was that traditionally you would get to a certain point and you'd be recognised for being really good at your job and you'd get promoted, and then you might, you know, contribute something really exceptional and you'd get promoted again, whether that be with more money or status. And then at some point you'd get thrown into management, which you may or may not be good at. But let's say you weren't particularly good at it, you kind of stagnate because you're now this person who had three really successful positions, and now you've got to a position that maybe isn't your natural domain, and you're no longer exceptional at it. And so you kind of stagnate for the next 20 years. So I think they've recognized and have put a lot in place where you can actually take either route and still contribute in a massive way to the company. So I think that's really interesting. And
I think that's really good because, you know, I think that typically what happens is that someone either feels that their career isn't moving forward because they're a senior developer or they're a technical lead or whatever the title is in the particular company they work for. And, you know, the only route, you know, to greater remuneration seems to be to take some sort of management role.
Exactly. I think that's, particularly in the UK, that's the route that I think we're all familiar
with.
Yes,
yeah.
And the way that you sort of perhaps counter that is to go off and start your own thing, your own agency, your own company or your own consultancy. So you have that, you have a bit of both worlds, don't you, where to the outside world you're perceived as being a director of a company or similar. But you can still keep your hand in. I think if in more traditional setups, there's a definite track whereby you are, management is the perceived at least as the ultimate goal, that in order to have status and respect within the company, you have to manage people. And I think being a great manager is very, very different from being a great developer.
Yeah.
And a lot of people can marry up those two very well. But a lot of people struggle. And, you know, I think once you move into a sort of lead role, a lot of things become evident. Like, you know, you don't really have time to do the work. And I think in the UK, at least, you're still expected to do a big workload as well as do the management side.
Yeah.
And I think progressive companies are the ones that recognize that actually your ultimate role is the team and your individual contribution is heavily diminished. You know, you still need to kind of keep your hand in with your craft and keep up, but you're not coding in anger, as we would say, or you're not necessarily being the person to check out the latest and greatest developments to see how relevant they are to your business and things like that.
No, exactly. I think, you know, there's also a point here to be made about the management or those roles within teams that aren't necessarily deep tech, don't necessarily need to be man management as such, because there's a lot of roles out there, whether it be, you know, product management or whether it be strategy or what, or, you know, business development or whatever the particular field that you're interested in is. It doesn't need to be that you move into man management, because I know that's something that a lot of developers feel uncomfortable about, or at least a lot of developers I've worked with, they don't feel necessarily confident to manage a team of people and do all the sort of personnel stuff that goes along with that, but they do want to have a more senior role, and often that comes in the form of managing the product itself or managing production. That's I see coming up quite a lot. You know, that people can become production managers because they're very good at managing the build of a website or a web application or whatever from the ground up, because they've seen every part of it as a developer.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely true. The I think there's also something else in that a lot of deeply technical people or people who are immersed in their craft, whether that be design, front end, or back end, or whatever.
Yeah.
There's a fear that as you progress and you move away from the code face, that the people who are on your team are going to surpass you in terms of knowledge. And
yes,
and knowledge is definitely a badge of honor in our industry, especially on the tech side. I think, at least, and you know, to be able to admit that maybe your team are more up to date, more up on the,
and should be,
it's often hard. And I think I've seen it on many occasions over the last sort of 15, 20 years where, people who are maybe in the team also look down upon their quote-unquote manager because they're not as technically advanced or perceived to be as technically advanced. And I think what's not always realized is, you know, those people were in the shoes of those developers at some point,
yes,
and would 100% have the chops to get back up to speed on any of those developments should they wish. They've just chosen to go a different route. So I think it's a fine balancing act, particularly with tech.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where is the cliche is it's so fast moving that to be perceived to be, you know, drastically out of date is to your detriment, I think, as a manager. So
yeah.
I think there are tactics that you could employ to work out where to spend, you know, your time keeping up. I mean, you know, whether it's just broad, you know, big picture kind of ideologies around the technologies, or, you know, do you actually go up and code a React, you know, project?
Yeah.
I'd argue that as long as you can understand the
application of that technology.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I mean, what would you say to someone, because this is something that I struggled with, I think, when, because, you know, I think you and I have been talking about this for quite a long time, and I've been transitioning away from the code face, as we call it, for probably about 4 or 5 years, but, you know, still dipping in and out of code all the time, because that's my bread and butter, as it were. Mm. What would you say to somebody who I think, because I think this is quite common, people feel almost afraid to give up those tools, to give up those skills, I should say, because they fear that's the route to earning money. You know, if you become, you know, the minute that you step outside and you do a non-technical job, first of all, there's a non-technical job on your CV. So the next, if you then wanted to go and get another technical job in the future, the person would look at your CV and go, oh, so, you know, wait, you're a product manager before this?
Mm.
And the other thing is also, you know, maybe you've been a product manager for 2, 3, 4 years and then you're out of date. So people are going to say, well, you know, they can't possibly know what the latest tools are. They can't possibly know latest developments, et cetera. I think that's a really sort of valid fear that people have, that they're going to become, you know, unable to earn a living.
I think that's totally valid. And I think the question I would pose then, and it's something that maybe came a bit more naturally to me over time, was your motivation for making that change at that point.
Yeah.
If it's purely remuneration, I mean, that's absolutely valid. But, you know, that's questionable, isn't it? Is that the right route that you want to take just to make money? Because there are many ways to make money.
Uh-huh.
I
think what a lot of developers struggle with, though, is the fact that they feel, and this is just from discussions I've had with colleagues and stuff, is that they feel that if they step away from the code and don't do it anymore, then there's always developer jobs around. They could always go back to development if they needed to. But these days, things that you do move so fast, and, you know, the correct, you know, framework for X or Y changes every 5 minutes, and you're going to be seen out of date very quickly. And are you going to be able to grab that PHP job that you need to pay the bills if maybe you're not that good at management, or you know, it doesn't work out?
I think the thing I've often realized is over the years that, you know, if you read a lot of the blogs, or you're following the industry insiders, or you're going to conferences, you're probably dealing with the top sort of 5% of the industry. You're
yeah.
dealing with the people who are those, you know, cliche term, thought leaders, people who are pushing the boundaries. And these people tend to be very, very, very niche, right? You know,
yeah.
the people who are pushing the boundaries in JavaScript probably spent all their days focusing on, you know, performance related stuff with JavaScript, or
sure.
someone like Harry, who we talked about before, Roberts, you know, with his CSS architecture stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I've no idea. I've chatted with Harry. I don't think he's a PHP coder. Probably couldn't go and get a PHP job because he's very, very narrowed in on a particular niche, and that's
yeah.
serving him really, really well. And I also think that, you know, the majority of jobs out there, if you take a year or two out and you just spend sort of a couple of weeks getting yourself back up to speed on the latest, you know, developments in PHP, I mean, it has developed a lot from, say, version 4 to where we are now. But fundamentally, the way that you code, the way, you know, the architecture, the server platforms and so on and so forth aren't radically different, are they? I think as long as you've got the confidence that you can learn and get back up to speed in a certain
yeah.
area, and not feel that you have to go out and know every last thing, because I think the majority of people out there producing websites, whether they be WordPress or PHP or Zend or, you know, all these different frameworks,
yeah,
aren't necessarily, you know, they're jobbing developers like we were. We were just, we weren't necessarily pushing the boundaries of technology. We were using technology that had been around for a while and was, you know, developing slowly. So I think it's absolutely possible. And I did that to a certain degree a few years ago when we started working together. I came back and hadn't really coded for a while and kind of just realized that, yeah, this is something that will pay the bills for a bit. Let's get back up to speed and, you know, read the docs and work out what needs to be done. And I think, you know, if you go and hang out with some other coders or people who've kept up and just sort of, you know, soak up the knowledge and the best practices of the sort of recent times, then I think you can do that. But I think it boils down to questioning what your motivation will be. I mean, it's so common though, isn't it? The number of developers we know or people like ourselves who have the desire to move away from it. And I don't think it's always, in most cases, not necessarily related to remuneration. It's more a desire to not necessarily be doing, you know, the donkey work, the sort of...
I think it's linked to a lot of things. I think it's linked to isolation. I think it's linked to sort of not having the level of variety in your job that you want after a certain amount of time. I also think that developers are particularly, or at least people that I know, are very worried about, you know, admitting they've changed and that maybe code isn't the, you know, thing that lights them on fire anymore. You know, and I think that another thing I was thinking when you were talking about what to do, you know, if you feel that you know, can't take a step back into development, should you need to. I think the other thing that I found is that you have to commit to the next role, as it were, and embrace that and say, you know, instead of introducing yourself as, well, I used to be a developer.
Yes.
You know, it's a classic mistake that's made all the time. It's almost like, I want to validate myself, so I'm going to tell you that I used to be an ASP.NET developer or whatever. Or I'm going to tell you that, you know, I spent 20 years coding, but now I'm doing this. I think you have to sort of to almost throw that off. And it's fine to, you know, obviously you've got all that knowledge that you've amassed over the years. But, you know, to say, to not hedge your bets, I guess. To not say, you know, I'm a consultant, but I do a little bit of development. Should you need me to? Because you're just going to end up coding. Again, because that's the way that these things work, because there's so much demand for it.
I think that's really interesting. It's probably something we should touch on in you know, in another year's time. The way that you position yourself, and often, you know, if you're introduced to someone for the first time, this I'm a independent web architecture consultant. You see that person as an independent web architect consultant.
Yes.
As soon as you say, "Oh, I'm an ex developer, but now I'm doing this," you're kind of confused, right? What is this person?
Yes.
And fluffy job titles aside, I think the way that you put yourself across and that kind of, you know, 4 or 5 words that you use to describe yourself when meeting people is how that person is going to perceive you moving forward. And you can almost muddy the waters trying to look for that validation, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, and it almost, that sentence, you know, "I used to be a developer," almost sounds like you feel more comfortable introducing yourself as that. Because you feel a bit, you feel a bit like you're, you know, you're not really a product developer, you know, product manager or whatever you are now, you know, or, you know, you're not really a team leader or you're not really a project manager or whatever you've moved into.
Exactly. I think as well, though, you're never really an ex-developer, are you? It's like, I once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. I think you're always a developer.
I think you always think like a developer. So.
Exactly. And just because you might not be up to date on the latest syntax or, you know, where to put the curly brace or the semicolon in anger, I don't think that diminishes the fact that, you know, earning a living is hard. And if you've earned your living cranking out code, regardless of what that is, you've achieved a lot. And I think, you know, anyone who's put any kind of code into production, whether it be for their own site or a local business or a big tech company, you know, you can't really take that away. I guess the thing about technology, in contrast to, say, journalism, whilst there's been big, huge developments in, you know, writing style and that, but I guess the rate of change is slower. You know, the English language does develop, but it doesn't develop as quick as, say, you know, technology language or technology stuff. So maybe those kind of things are, you don't need to seek out that validation. So I once used to be really, really good at this, but now I'm focusing on this. But
yes. I think it's also, there's a thing about generalist versus specialist as well. I feel like it's almost very easy to introduce yourself as, you know, I'm a front-end developer. or I'm, you know, a JavaScript engineer, or whatever the particular title you have as a developer. You know, it's normally relatively niche. You know, people have traditionally, you know, got into these streams within development. But when you step outside that, our jobs suddenly become far more generalist. And, you know, you say, let's say you're consulting. Well, that's, you know, a very broad church, isn't it? There's not, you can't necessarily say, well, I'm going to be doing this, and this for you, but I'm not going to do this. Like, you're suddenly pulled into so many different areas of the business that you're working with. Because often developers would just be left on the sidelines and been told, you know, well, their development, we'll pull them in when we need them.
Whereas, as
a consultant, you might be then pulled into a lot more different, you know, or not just a consultant, but any role that is more generalist than development.
It's interesting though with the word consultant, because I think we've both used that over the years. But do you think? I remember when I worked in the NHS, and we would have management consultants would come in, and they'd literally be, you know, fresh out of university on there. So, and I always thought, you know, isn't consultancy or that kind of way that you can come in and you can see the angles, I mean, something that you benefit from having those years as a developer, right? I definitely think so, because you start to understand some of the process, some of the timescales, some of the kind of the blockers that are traditionally put in place when you work in organizations. Yeah. And having that kind of background, I think will really pay dividends in terms of the effect that you can have as a consultant when you can come in and you can see all the different angles. You can see maybe you've been through some of the similar experiences in terms of the dynamics of the team and things like that. So maybe in a sense, you know, having that background and then segueing into consultancy and being able to sort of help people unblock, you know, the path to success in their projects, I think, you know, it really only comes from having certain backgrounds. And so I think, you know,
I mean, I think, you know, the word consultant that gets misused and gets abused a little bit, I think, as well, you know, that people straight out of university coming in and saying they're consultants doesn't make sense to me, because the idea of a consultant is that you're bringing your experience to bear on a project or on a business or whatever, you know, whatever the situation might be. So therefore, you know, you need to have experience. So that experience could be technical, or it could be managerial, or it could be in running business or building products or whatever you might be doing. But there needs to be some experience there in order for you to contribute that experience to the company. And that's normally what the company's buying. They're buying someone who has, in the case of what I'm doing, you know, built a video player before, or, you know, worked with filmmakers and in tech before, or, you know, or whatever the situation might be, they are looking for people with specific backgrounds.
And
I find myself, you know, just looping back a little bit to the sort of, you know, once a developer, always a developer thing. I find myself, you know, I'm in a meeting, and maybe there's some people from the business side of things in that meeting, and there's a designer, and there's, you know, a UX person, and there's me, and we're talking about stuff. I find myself taking the stance of the developer typically. You know, I question things about how functionality will actually work, and, you know, try and root out vagaries within the project and try and set them in stone, because that's what the developer will ultimately need. So I think that, you know, you do always end up thinking like a developer. Whatever happens, however long you've been away from it, you're always going to bring that experience to bear on a project.
I agree. I mean, just something else, just to, on the topic though, do you think we've both kind of made livings from code over the years, and we both still work within the boundaries of the web and tech industries, but why do you think I wouldn't say we've fallen out of love with it. That would be very much over-egging it, but you know, the desire to be at the bleeding edge has diminished. I mean, what for yourself, have you got more interested in, okay, I'll put it, I'll come from my angle. I think I've got more interested in the end results than the journey and the process.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. You know, a colleague of mine, Distrify Douglas, asked me, was talking about this subject. He sent me an article, I'll have to root it out for the show notes, that was about, you know, I think it was a, they were proposing a new job title, which was product developer or something like that. And it was sort of talking about people who don't necessarily want, don't care about the nitty gritty of whether the thing is coded correctly and whether, you know, this thing's scalable or performant, all that stuff. But they're very excited by hacking together ideas and creating something that works and, you know, solving business problems with the code still. And I sort of see that as a really nice segue from people who are maybe a little bit, who still want to solve problems, because fundamentally that's what developers do, but who don't necessarily want to be sitting there solving a problem, which is that, you know, I want to shave X amount of milliseconds off this page load time or whatever. You know, because I think that can become quite monotonous. And however excited you are by technology, I think that those... those parts of the job can grate after a while.
Yeah, I think being focused on that kind of minutia, it gets tiring. I think you just want to ship stuff at the end and get it out there. And I think, you know, getting the thing out there, whether it be freelance projects or you know, working in a big company, the joy for me, I've realized, is actually just getting out there and seeing what people do with it, whether it be a blog post, a tutorial, a screencast, a piece of software, some code that's going to help people.
Yeah, I think I also realized that, you know, when I was working on projects, that typically what would happen is I would love the build up to the project. I love the planning and the design and the user experience stuff, and then it would be the production itself that I'd find really tiresome and frustrating. And I think what I discovered was that it wasn't that I didn't like the act of producing something and shipping it out into the world anymore. It was just that I didn't like sort of day-to-day hacking, you know, in Sublime. It became almost exhausting, to be honest. It's sort of like the constant trying to keep up. Am I doing this right? Is this the, you know, and I just realized that, you know, I want to be involved in this still.
Yeah.
I want to be involved in, the cycle or whatever of producing something and shipping it, but I don't necessarily, you know, I'm obviously pretty fatigued at the actual being part of the team that builds it.
I also think the other thing for me was that these things, such as the nature of the web, are never finished. You can never draw a line under something. It's always just a phase. It's always just a part of the journey to the next iteration.
Yes.
Whereas if you're, you know, involved in writing or publishing, or they have a definite end date, you know, and you move on, and then you do iterate, you produce something better the next time, but you can definitely see that piece of work sits in kind of isolation. So, you know, if you're writing a lot, that article is good, it's finished. Yes, you can go back and edit it, but you'll probably move on and do something better the next time, and you'll learn from the feedback that you've got from that particular thing.
Yeah.
So just to round this out, I mean, what do you say to someone who is maybe freelancing, who wants to maybe move towards something that isn't being at the code face every day? I mean, that's a really tricky situation, isn't it? I mean, we've all been there. I've pushed code for a living. We've worked together on projects. You run a small agency. But where do you go within those confines? I mean, if you've set it up as a, we produce websites kind of, I guess maybe the only way is that you grow out that agency, so you become an agency owner, which may not be the direction you want to go in, because then that takes you away from the code, or you go and get a job in a company. I mean,
I haven't got any specific advice, but I think just to learn from my mistake, as it were, I can tell you what my mistakes were up to that point. I think that I tried almost everything during that. I mean, I suppose I should explain that in the context of that I wanted to work in a very particular sector, being film. But I tried almost everything within my power to move away from code during that time that I was trying to segue. And the thing that I think I learned, or the thing that is the mistake, is to is to continue jump from one thing to the next, trying to find the right thing. You need to decide upon what it is that you want to do, and then aim for that and not constantly be looking back at that coding job that you might be doing if you weren't trying to do this. So you might end up earning a little less money for however long, or you might end up, you know, turning down some jobs that you would probably originally have been quite happy to do, but you need to do that in order to break free of the cycle of coding all the time. Because I would go into situations and I'd chat to people and I'd be saying, well, I don't want to code anymore, but I'm doing this and this, you know. I'd talk about the different things I'm interested in doing for them and how, what experience I can bring to the table, and there'd always be this sort of, but you can code and you could contribute that. And the temptation would be to say to that company, yeah, I'll happily muck in if I need to. But the end result is always that you're coding. Because that's a valuable, it's a valuable skill, and you could get them to the goal, end goal, quicker than just contributing knowledge, you know?
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I think that's a really proactive approach as well. I think there are some sort of more passive things that can happen where you realize that you're moving in that direction. I mean, I know a lot of people who've kind of run sort of little events or projects like that, and they've kind of found themselves enjoying those more and more and more.
Yeah.
And that has brought them to attention of a whole different kind of audience, whether that be through, you know, their organizational skills or their access to the industry. And, you know, that's taken them down a different route as well. But I think, we've had many chats over the years about kind of the quest, if you will, to try and find that niche for you. You know, yes. What is it that you want to end up in? And I think where you are now is it's kind of a perfect mix, really. You know, you're doing the film stuff, you're doing some projects where you can put that technology experience to use, but you're not actually, you're kind of the ringmaster in terms of bringing all the people together to help get those projects finished. And I think there's a lot in that. There's a lot of satisfaction in that. The joy of, you know, coordinating those elements and bringing good people to work together is really satisfying. But maybe that's something that just comes, you know, after time. You know, I don't think either of us would have been exceptionally good at that.
I think I also learned that it wasn't one particular thing. You know, I was looking for this one particular thing. But for example, the work that I do with Assemble is very much focused upon, you know, education and helping filmmakers learn how to use digital more effectively.
Mm.
Whereas, you know, the work I do with Maxwell at Kolonna is very much focused on, e-commerce and building a whole online business for him from scratch. And those things, while they both involve educating people about digital,
yes,
that's the common thread. They're very different in terms of the conversations I can be having or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe you have to be open to what opportunities come along as well. I know that sounds really sort of like, you know, just wait until it, you know, it doesn't sound very helpful. It's not a proactive thing that you can do. But I think that you'd be surprised that you go into some situations thinking, oh, this could be another old coding job.
Mm.
I'm just going to be doing more code or whatever. And actually what they need from you or what you can offer them is something very different.
I also think, you know, just to sort of finish on this, I think one of the big things is you never underestimate just getting out there and talking to people.
Yeah,
I can honestly say literally every opportunity that's come my way over the years has been through meeting people. And because you don't always realize what skills you possess, you know, through conversations, whether it be at a meetup, a conference, or just in friends of friends, or, you know, you're going to hang out at an agency for a day just chatting to people, people start picking on qualities that you have that they will find useful.
Yes.
And you may have had no concept that actually, A, you had that quality, B, someone's interested in it, and C, that they may well pay you to extract that knowledge from you or help them with a problem. So
yeah.
I think sitting behind the terminal and sort of trying to find a way through is one approach, but also, you know, combine that with getting out there, meeting people within your industry or within the sectors that you would like to move into.
Uh-huh.
And if those things don't exist locally, start one. This has been a great story about one of the guys I know in London who's works, Alex from We Make Websites, and they started a merchant focused meetup in London, yeah, called the Shopify Meetup. And the amount of business that has brought them, and the way that it's put them as this authority within the UK,
yeah,
has done wonders for them. And it's opened up speaking opportunities, workshop opportunities, writing opportunities, all these things that, you know, when they started out, they were building websites. That's what they were doing. And now, yeah. more, you know, they do that. They do consultancy. They do marketing. They do copyright. They do social campaigns. They help with, you know, product photography. So it's been really interesting. And I think by putting themselves out there and taking a bit of a risk, and they've built something that's had, you know, huge positive effect on their business. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I think the other thing I would say as well, just one final thing, is that take that meeting.
Yeah.
Because I know that's a cliche, but I think that both Assemble and Klarna, so some of my two main clients at the moment, neither of them came to me saying, I need you to do what I'm currently doing for them.
Hmm.
They came to me asking for, in the case of Assemble, you know, to a conversation about development originally. And in the case of Maxwell at Klarna, I need a website help. Yeah, those were the kind of, you know, conversations that we originally had. And I could easily have not taken those meetings thinking to myself, well, they just want me to code something for them.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, it turned out that their needs were very different to that. And you know, you have a conversation, well, what are you doing now? And you tell them what you're doing, and they need that particular thing, or they you contribute some knowledge during the course of that meeting that they're suddenly, you know, very engaged with, and they think, I want this person involved.
Yes, exactly.
So I think, you know, I would say, you know, if you're interested in the company, that's the key thing. If you're interested in the person or the company that are contacting you, don't just blow them off because they want you to code.
Mm.
You know, go and speak to them and see how you could work with them.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. Really interesting. Yeah. I think this will be a topic in terms of positioning and things like that we can return to. So maybe it's worth, before we announce the big contest winner from January 2015.
Yeah, waiting a long time for the answer to this question.
They'll be happy.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons that we haven't, you know, we've talked about the practical reasons of moving houses and having babies and life and
yeah.
lofts and stuff. But we also sort of suggested that one of the reasons is that as we've explained, I think, hopefully, you know, adequately, sort of our interests haven't necessarily focused directly on the things like, you know, back end and front end tech. But I think, you know, so this is probably going to end up more of a conversation like this. It's going to be talking about working in the industry. We're going to be talking, I'm sure we'll, you know, some dog tech will reappear, a few apps and a bit of sort of banter on sort of what's going on and things like that. But if anyone is still listening, knock, knock, wake up. Any topics like this, I mean, these are the kind of things that we chat about. I'll say down the pub, but we never go to the pub together, do we?
No.
We
on
just,
the phone.
On the phone. On the old dog and bone.
While walking to a coffee shop.
While walking to a coffee shop, yes. These are the kind of things that we chat about a lot. I guess it's more around, say, working in the industry, the trials and you know, tribulations of that, things that we find difficult, things that we've, you know, have gone well or not so. So those are the kind of things that we would like to discuss more. So if anyone's got any...
I think the conversation will become more generalist as our jobs have.
Yeah. Yeah.
It will become broader and broader. But you know, I think hopefully there's an appetite for that.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, we were never talking about front-end or back-end tech anyway.
No, I know. I was terrible with the curly brace. You know, let's be honest, there's a reason we moved away from code. So, yeah, any suggestions, most welcome.
Yes.
You know, whether it be business or tools or remote working, sort of positioning.
Work-life balance.
Yeah. And who's to say we have the answers? We've just got some hard-worn experience that we'd be happy to share. So, right. Finally. We set a rather hard contest back in January 2015 when the world had a different complexion.
It did.
It did, didn't it? There was
different government.
Different government, yes. The Trump was merely a tower and not a presidential potential candidate. And it was hard to remember what was going on back in 2015.
Yes.
January 2015. But Our friend and yours, Mr. HRH Craig of Wales, kindly, and I have yet to ask whether he will be willing to honour, although I know he is a man of his word.
He is.
He is a man of his word.
Even
if we're not. Better late than never. He offered to give away the third set of the Five Simple Steps pocket guides.
Yes.
As wonderful as they are. Now, if the paper editions are no longer available, I'm sure we can crowbar out the digital editions.
Yeah.
And if he turns around and says, how dare you come back to me after 1 year demanding, demanding that I give prizes to people, I will make up with some suitable Shopify swag.
Yeah.
And that's a promise. So the question was, what was the question, Kieran?
There were two questions, and you could answer either of them.
That was easy, wasn't it? I mean, who sets a question with two,
I couldn't pick between them, could I?
No, that's right.
So the first question was, what was Matthew Lillard's handle in the cult classic 1995 film Hackers?
Classic.
Which, to be honest with you, is ridiculously easy, borderline, insulting. And the second question was a bit more difficult, I think. In the same year, Sandra Bullock played a systems analyst in the film The Net. During the course of the film, her identity is changed by cyber criminals. Ooh. But what is the name they gave her?
Right, so okay. What was the answer?
So I can tell you that the answer to the first question is serial killer. Nice. Serial spelt as in breakfast cereal.
Okay.
And the answer to the second question is Ruth Marks.
Ruth Marks?
Yes, Marks and X.
I wonder how they came up with that. I mean, if you're a cyber criminal, the psychology between picking a name if you're a cyber criminal.
Well, I think they actually just assigned her somebody's actual
The classic
social security number.
Oh, I see.
It was the classic social security switcheroo.
Switcheroo, yes, which is almost as bad as the kind of picking the name off the grave of someone who died young.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. I've seen in many films. Day of the Jackal in particular, classic.
So the first person to reply to this...
Not with one answer, but both.
It was just one answer, I think.
Was it? I thought...
Many people did reply with both, which is very impressive.
Studious.
Yeah, studious. Quick Googlers. Is Matthew Wilmot or Matt Wilmot?
Friend of the show.
Indeed. And he replied saying, serial killer, superb film. Annette wasn't bad either, to be fair.
Questionable.
I think he might be the next Mark Kermode with that kind of review.
I don't know how to respond to that.
Anyway.
well done, Matt. You have to appreciate that Kieran comes from a very highbrow film perspective. Having studied it, he's done the theory, which influences the practice, sadly. He get him on the subject of Minions, he's got nothing good to say about it. But anyways, moving on.
Turbo the Snail.
Turbo the Snail, an interesting one. I thoroughly enjoyed that. And you just spent hours slating how it had, cost more to make than it...
Well, you see, from my perspective, it bombed at the box office. It cost them a huge amount of money. It was the biggest flop of the year, all that stuff. So that's what I was saying. I wasn't saying that... And also... I can't possibly imagine pitching a snail racing movie.
Well, that's maybe why you're doing what you're doing and Mr. Snail film pitcher is doing what he's doing. Well, maybe not any longer.
He lost a lot of money.
It was great. He swallowed some nitros or whatever it is those boy racers use in their engines, and he just became this super fast snail that won the Daytona 500. It was amazing.
Right.
My 5-year-old enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
That's the point, isn't it? Unfortunately, no one took their 5-year-old to the cinema to see it.
No, we just got Netflix. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Maybe it's the long tail.
It's the long snail tail. Anyway, Matt, well done.
Well done, Matt.
Matt has my email address. Please drop me a note, and I will do my damnedest to crowbar the books out of HRH Craig Wales, fine proprietor of Five Simple Steps.
Uh-huh.
And we will be back. We make no promises because we don't keep them.
No.
But
we said that this was returning in September 2015.
Well, that was always a risk, wasn't it?
Yeah.
September's a busy month.
It is. Well, you're all over the place normally.
Thanks.
That's just a general statement.
Fat. Great. Yes, jeez.
Oh, we'd also like to congratulate Mike Coos on being the new face of Land Rover.
We didn't discuss this.
Did we?
I was, I rarely look at the Twitters these days, you know, such as, ever since they played around with their algorithm and the stock market price tumbled, I feel they're of no relevance to me. However, I was perusing the Twitter last night and at Pop Coos on some bridge somewhere taking a picture of a sunset.
Yeah, with lots of Land Rover branding.
Yeah, he is. I mean, what? Maybe on the next show we could think, what could Mike Coos be the face of next? That could be a regular segment.
Yeah, I think so. Genuinely, I was quite impressed by the little video and everything.
It was good. I know he had to get up very early to do that particular shoot.
Did he?
Very early indeed. For sunset, I suppose. Or was it sunrise? I can't remember. Whichever it was. Yeah. Anyways, on that fine note.
That bombshell.
Of the, combining of Land Rover and photography talent.
Yeah. Wrapping the show was smooth, isn't it?
It is always. It's a 10-minute process.
Yeah, exactly.
We've just gone over.
And finally.
We've just gone over a half-hour mark as well.
Oh, dear.
No, really. We're up to 50 minutes. But it's good to be back. Thank you all for listening. Who's to say where this could go? Hopefully only upwards. But any feedback, most welcome. You can find us on Twitter. I think the account's still active. No one offered to buy it from us in the intervening year, so
it's a shame, isn't it?
I guess we've still got it, but you can check out, refamiliarise yourselves with the beautiful logo of Sean Johnson did for us. You'll find that on the Twitter and, of course, our website, backtofrontshow.com. And Kieran is now taking on responsibility for the show notes, so expect the grammar to be better, the humour to be less.
But then for them to be very late indeed.
Very late indeed. So I will be hitting stop and persuading him to get straight to work. But we shall be back. Thank you for listening. Speak soon. Cheers.
Cheers.